if you can circulate those, just left them at the front at the moment. Okay, so there's slides, there's the copy of the slides and also next week's tutorial. Okay, so what I want to talk about today are a couple of ways in which we can take logic programming a bit further. I want to finish up saying a little bit more about the closed world assumption, negation as failure, and so on. And I want to talk about something that was, again, trying to deal with the question of negation and its logical meaning, called the Clark completion, so taking a definite clause program and then giving you a stronger logical reading of it rather than the one we've got so far. And I want to talk about Lloyd Topor transformation, which is an attempt to let us use all of first-order logic as a logic programming language. So there have been quite a few attempts to do this, and none of them have really taken off. I will talk next time about using higher-order logic and a different way of going further, and that, I think, is something which has an awful lot of power behind it and hasn't really been exploited so far. Okay, so let's see what we've got here. Okay, so the first bit is things we've already seen. So the question here of being able to distinguish between a response from prologue that says no, to distinguish between unprovable and false. So when prologue comes back and says no, the literal, the obvious meaning of that is prologue couldn't find the derivation of the query from the program. But there are lots of situations where you want the answer to be no, to be false. And what we're trying to do here is find a way of distinguishing between the situations where it's good to say it only means I can't prove it, and the situations where it makes sense to go a little bit further and say, therefore the answer is false. So as we said last time, if we take it every answer no as saying the query is actually false, then sometimes we will be making mistakes here. In any situation where we have some positive information, some positive atomic information, that's a normal query which doesn't have conjunctions in it or disjunctions or anything. So normal query, we're saying, are there some values for the variables such that that can be derived from the program? So if you just simply have incomplete information, you don't have all the positive cases, you can't derive all the positive cases, then saying that you're going to use this is not going to faithfully model the situation that you're trying to model. So it's clear this is not always a valid assumption to make. So we also looked at the closed world assumption, which is a little bit more precise about what's going on. And it says, well, actually the atomic queries we're interested in are just the ground ones. So when we're making a query, it's does this property hold of some particular terms without any variables in them? So the notion of ground here is it's a term that doesn't have any variables. So it may be a constant, or it may be a function symbol applied to some other things which are constants or function symbols. But no variables there at all. And in this situation, this behaves much better. So if we're only going to use this procedure, we're only going to use negation as failure in restricted circumstances like this, then we've got much better behavior of what's going on. So logically speaking, so this is not the way it's implemented, but logically speaking, what we can do is to say, given a particular program, so T here, then notionally, we can add to that program the negation of any ground atomic statements that we can't actually prove. So we're adding explicitly in, we're saying if I can't prove things of this shape, then I'm going to say they're actually false. And this is actually a pretty sensible thing to do. So the closed world assumption is normally informally given as, well, all the objects I've mentioned are actually the only objects that are out there. So it's a standard database thing. You've got an entry of a number of people in the class, and if somebody isn't in the if somebody's name doesn't appear on the list, that means they're not taking the class. So you don't put in the negative information explicitly. So here we've got the notion of following from a program T using the closed world assumption. So it simply means it follows from T with these extra statements XT added in. So it's a normal notion of consequence with some extra negated statements added in. So closed world assumption when we use it here, is if we have a prologue query of this particular form, does a particular property hold of concrete, of ground terms, and we get the answer no, and then we say yes, that actually is false. So that's quite a sensible use of it, and this has some rather nice properties. So here I want to introduce a term which can be confusing, because we've already got the notion of a monotone function as a function from a set of sets back to itself. So here I'm interested in using the word monotonic, which is related, this is a different terminology we're using here. So this property that says, if I add some extra information, then what I can deduce can only get bigger. That's what's called monotonic logic. So it's a property of deduction here, not of a function from set to set back to itself. So this holds for standard logic, and it's really an important property. It says if I have some set of statements T, which might be a program of definite clauses, and I have some particular Q, which is a logical consequence, then if I extend the theory by adding in some statements X, that Q will still be provable, will still be a logical consequence. And this is a good thing about proof. Once you've proved it once, then you discover some extra statements, you can add them in, and that proof still will be a valid proof. So this is holds for first order logic, for propositional logic, and so on. But actually, if we're doing reasoning involving the closed world assumption, which is doing what we said on this previous slide, so the notion of following from a theory T with these extra statements, the closed world assumption statements added. So now if I take a T and enlarge that, then the extra statements we add will actually become fewer. So there's a positive and negative thing going on here, which means if we're using the closed world assumption, and then we get some extra additional information, then we can't rely anymore on this property of monotonicity. Now, actually, a whole pile of human reasoning is non-monotonic. So most common sense reasoning is non-monotonic. You have certain, so lots of reasoning about beliefs that say, I know this, this, and this. It's a reasonable conclusion that this holds. But now you discover some extra piece of information and say, well, actually, no, I don't think this conclusion follows anymore. I've got some extra information. I withdraw a reasonable conclusion I made before. So let's see. So last time we looked at an example which didn't have that poor Fred statement. Last lecture we had the program that didn't have poor Fred in it. It was that program without poor Fred. And using the closed world assumption, if we don't have poor Fred, then we can conclude its negation. There's no way of deriving that Fred is poor if we don't have that particular statement there. So we get not poor Fred. Now for this program, of course we can derive poor Fred. So when we add in the negations of the atomic statements we can't prove, we no longer add in negation of poor Fred. So we've extended the program, and now we have to withdraw the conclusion that Fred is not poor. So there's lots of negations floating around here, so you have to think a little bit hard about this. So we're starting from one program, and it's reasonable to conclude that Fred is not poor using the closed world assumption. We've now enlarged the program by adding in an extra statement, and now we can no longer conclude that Fred is not poor. So this is a property of non-monotonicity. As you can imagine, this is computationally rather badly behaved, because if you update the program, then you're going to lose certain derivations that you could have had before. So it's like updating a knowledge base, and now you have to retract some of the things that were good inferences before. And that's one of the reasons why maintaining consistency over time dynamic knowledge bases is such a computationally hard problem. Okay, so this is saying if we've got the closed world assumption, then we lose this monotonicity property. So let's think about this notion of the least Herbrand model or the minimal Herbrand model. So what we saw when we looked previously at definite clause programs was that there's a distinguished structure that we can build up called this Herbrand model. And in some ways, this is the nicest model of what's going on. So we have some set of definite clauses. like this in some base cases. So then we can build by using the notion we had of, in this case, monotone functions. We can actually say, here's a minimal set of objects, and here we're going to use the terms of the language to build a model. There's a smallest model, there's a smallest structure that will actually make everything in the program true. And it has this nice property that something is true in this least Herbrand model, if and only if it has proof by Bachian inference. So these particular structures that we can get, which associate to each predicate a set of the objects that satisfy that predicate, that's actually a good candidate for the meaning of the program here. So it's a good candidate to say, actually, we're thinking of a situation in which certain things are true, certain things are false, and we're actually going to just look inside that structure, if we can, and say, if a particular statement is true in that structure, then that's what we mean by it being true or following from the program, and same for false. So this is a different... So this, because this has this close relationship between provability using backchain and true in a particular structure. Now, actually, what you can see here is that if you have a ground query, then this is from the definition of, so if in here, so in this here, the, I have a particular clause, but let's slightly change the example, suppose. So maybe we have R of X, Q of Y, and suppose we have Q of 17, and Q of F of X, if Q of X. So then, if you imagine, what sort of things do we have here? So basically, we've got the two predicates R and Q. What do we know about Q? Well, we know it holds of 17, and we know it holds of F of anything if it holds, F of X if it holds of X. And we know that R holds of anything that Q holds. Now, in this sort of situation, there's no way of finding any, of proving from this that there's anything that, for which R does not hold, or that Q does not hold. So it's consistent with this sort of program, and definite clause programs in general, that R is true for everything, and Q is true for everything. But there's this particular structure which makes the statements in the program true, which is this least Herbrand model. So in this case, we've got what we call the extension of Q, what's the set of objects, the interpretation of Q, the objects for which it holds, well, 17, F of 17, F of 17. And what about R? So the interpretation of R will be exactly the same set. So everything that for which this holds, R has to hold. It could hold for extra things, but we're choosing to say the only things for which it holds is what we've got there. So this, again, would be F of 17, and so on. So now we're saying if we want to know whether Q holds of some particular term, then some ground term, the only time it holds is if it's actually in this extension. Now these are infinite sets because you can apply F as often as you want. But that's what the closed world assumption is saying. So if we have a term such as, you know, if we have 0 or G of 14 or something, then these will not be in there. And so the closed world assumption says Q doesn't hold of these, and R doesn't hold of those objects, 0 and Q of, G of 14. So for ground queries, this gives exactly the right answer. So this supports the idea that the closed world assumption is a sensible thing to do, and it's only looking at these ground terms. So there certainly are problems in the case where negation as failure is used for goals that have variables in them, and we'll come along to see that rather shortly. Okay, so what I want to talk about now is this notion of a completion. So what we're saying in this sort of situation, we're saying if we take the closed world assumption, we can now get definite answers to certain questions which we didn't have definite answers for before. So now from this, if I'm asked R of 0, the answer no I now take this thing, this is actually false. Because this is not in Maurice Terban 1. But I can't, this is not a logical consequence of this program. So as I said, from this set of logical statements in the declarative reading, then I can't conclude, all I conclude is this may be true, it may be false, I don't have enough information. So the idea here is we're going to start with a set of definite clauses, and then we're going to add some extra statements. We're only going to add one statement in for any particular predicate. And this, what this does is to, so this works in certain circumstances, which I'm not trying to pin this down totally here. But what we're ending up with here is what's called the completion of the theory. And the claim is that actually the programmer intends more than the normal declarative reading here. The programmer doesn't mean only these things entail these things, they mean these things hold only if there's some circumstance under which they have to hold according to the program. And that's kind of an empirical question as to the meaning of programs, and when you write a whole bunch of programs in a logic programming language, you probably do start to think in that particular way. Okay, suppose we've got, so I'm not doing this in full generality, the idea is write down some examples and you should be able to see how this will work in the case of, for example, predicates with four arguments or two arguments. So here's a particular predicate with one argument, and we have a base case in which foo holds of A. Now that statement is actually equivalent to the statement that for all x, if x equals A, then foo holds of x. So certainly foo holds of A, then if x does equal to A, then foo of x. So that says that from foo of A we can get the universal statement. And if the universal statement is true, then plug in A in for x, and that tells us that foo must hold, since A, foo hold of A, since A equals A. So why are we doing this? What we're trying to do is to get a description of a predicate, which is in the form of something that looks like a definition. So this looks like half of a definition, so we're saying when does foo hold for a variable? Answer, when that variable takes a particular shape. So the idea of a definition that we have here is we can, so this is an abbreviational definition. So you define, say, some new property, and you want to know it's defined in all cases, so you just use some variables here which are distinct, and now you say this is some statement which doesn't involve this property. And then we can use anything we've got already defined. So P of X, Z and Q of Z. If these are already defined, then this is a definition, and this is an if and only if which we are writing these. This is meant to be an implication in both directions, and this acts as a definition. That means whenever I see this, I can just substitute this in for it. And if we have this going both ways, which is what we don't have in the normal logic programming setting, then you can say this fails if either of these fail, which is something we can't see from the normal definite clause setting. Okay, so the idea here is we're going to calculate the completion, and we're going to calculate the completion in the case where we have non-recursive predicates. So this is a restriction, of course. Well, we can apply the procedure anyway, but certainly the properties will not always hold. So suppose you've got a definite clause, and here I'm assuming P has only one argument, but could have several. So that's the normal shape of the clause. Now, the variables are all universally quantified, so the y's are all the variables that may appear here, and you have some number of q's in the body and p in the head. So first of all, we're going to use the trick we did before. So instead of having a t for p, we can just put in variables. Now, you could always do this in Prolog, because you can always write instead of p of, so this is a standard thing, instead of p of f of a, you can write, if you have something here in the head, you can then say p of x holds if x equals f of a, and something else. So actually, normally this is a preferred style to do it this way, but this is completely okay, logically equivalent. So if you do that for each of the clauses, then you can do this rather strange looking step that says, well, we've got two universal quantifiers, But actually, this why doesn't appear anywhere. This why doesn't actually appear in on the right-hand side of the implication. So this form that says we take the y and we restrict its scope to the left-hand side of the implication. So in the second bullet point, the scope of the y is the whole formula. And when we move it inside, so it's inside the x, so the scope there is only the left-hand side of that implication. It actually becomes existential, and that's slightly surprising. So why does that one hold? So this is the general equivalence that says that a formula for all y, f of y implies g, and a formula if there's some y such as f of y and g, those are actually logically equivalent, provided this y doesn't appear in the g at all. So the y is not being left floundering in the second case there. So the normal common sense examples here are things like, first one would say, if there's any player in the team, and so let me say that again. For every player in the team, if that player scores a goal, then the crowd is happy. And the second one says, if there's any player in the team that scores a goal, then the crowd is happy. So English actually mirrors this for all and any different ways of saying it. That's corresponding something to like this. So whatever the y is, if f holds for it, then something involving y is the case. And if anything has the property f, then this other thing must hold. So those are logically equivalent, and you can do the proof yourself. So what are we saying there? We're saying that the previous step allows us to take a particular clause, any definite clause, and put it in this shape where we have for all x, and the x just involves the variable, the freshly introduced variables there, and now the y's are become existentially quantified inside. So if we do that for each case, then what have we got? So this, the e1 up to en, now include that existential quantifier. So we've now got a whole set of different, for each clause we get something of this shape. For all x, if there's y such that certain things happen, then p holds of x. So we've got a whole bunch of those, these implications, and now we can take the left-hand sides and just take a disjunction of them, and we'll still get something logically equivalent to what we started with. So here we're saying, if e1, then something happens, if e2, then something happens. That's just the same as saying, if e1 or e2, then something happens. So all we've done so far is rewrite into something which is logically equivalent to the original definite clause program. And the actual final last step is to say, well, let's turn that implies into an if and only if. So this predicate now we've said is equivalent to, under any of these conditions, p of x. And now we say, well, actually, those are the only conditions under which p of x holds. So the normal implications in this direction, we found a way of wrapping them up and saying, well, here's an if and only if definition of p. So in this case, because r and q are just defined this way, we're now saying they are equivalent. And down here, we have two different ways in which q can hold, which we have to put together. So let's see a little example here. Tiny example, which doesn't have the existential quantifier, so it's relatively easy to see that what's going on here. So you have there two definite clauses. For all x, x is Scottish, x is British, the Fred is British. Take the completion. So here we're combining the two ways in which we have an x under British. So British is the predicate that's being defined. And now we're saying there are the two ways in which you can be British. You can be Fred, or you can be Scottish. As far as this program goes, we only have two ways in which this can happen. And so the completed program says, well, actually, this is an if and only if. And in this case, it's not a good idea because you don't have all the positive information. But that's what happens here if you take the completion. And when we take the completion, the idea is that we're trying to say this is the intention of the programmer rather than just the implies in one direction. So now if we have some x who we, using closed world assumption, we'd say you have some, suppose Di is not known to be Scottish, and Di is not equal to Fred, then we can now conclude that Di is not British, which is not something we could conclude before. So this gives us a way to conclude negative confirmation, which we didn't have before. So we rewrite the predicate into this particular, into the shape below. So the important thing about the shape is it's of the form for all x, here's the disjunction of conditions under which the predicate holds. And that's equivalent to the original situation. And now we just add in that it's an if and only if. Okay, so the proposal for the completion says do this for every clause in the program. And there's a little bit more to it. What do you do if you have predicates which don't appear in the head of anything? So normally you get errors when you have predicates. You get system errors with predicates and undefined predicates appear in the program. But actually, it can make sense to do this. You're just saying the predicate, which is always false. So here's the claim from John Lloyd, the Foundations of Logic Programming. Even though a programmer only gives a logic programming system the general program, the understanding is that conceptually the general program is completed by the system, and the programmer is actually programming with the completion. So this is a claim that actually using closed world assumption is a sensible thing to do, because this tells you something about the least Herbrand model. And the programmer typically does intend that these sorts of conclusions, that this sort of conclusion, these negated ones, are actually false. So if I query, is Di British, and I get back the answer no, the programmer's intention is typically that is false. But that's something that is not enforced by the normal declarative reading. Okay. What properties does this have? So the first one is that if you take the completion, you have everything from the original program plus some other things. So this is logically stronger. You made some additional statements. So the completion was got by changing an implies into an if and only if. So the if and only if gives you back the implies. So the completion is stronger, logically stronger, has the same statements, same conclusions, plus some extra ones. Here's a very, very nice feature, which is that the completion of a set of definite clauses is always consistent. So that says, if I take this completion, then this will not be a total piece of nonsense. It will have a model. And that's what we can see from the least Herbrand model situation. So we're not writing down something which is logical nonsense, like A and not A. If we had A and not A, we could conclude anything. We're not doing that. It will be a consistent view. So that's kind of a minimal notion of sensibleness for a program, for a logic program, that it should be consistent. And we saw before that definite clauses are always consistent, because we can always do this thing of saying, well, every statement would be true if every predicate is true everywhere. There are no negations floating around. So no problem with that. And finally, the completion adds no positive information. So if I have something, I have one of the normal atomic queries, then for atomic statements, we still have that A holds if and only if it holds in the completion. That's not obvious. So that says that what the completion is doing is letting us get back some negative information, allowing us to show certain things are false, but it's not getting in the way in positive information. Okay. So what I want to talk about now is an attempt that was made some time ago to try and extend the notion of logic programming to encompass the things we've thrown out. So in particular, existential quantification, explicit universal quantification, and so on. So let's try and generalize. So people had lots of ideas of how we might do these things. And as I've said, these haven't really taken off, but it's still an interesting question to try and think out what's a good way of trying to extend what's going on here. So we can think of general clauses in which we can now stick negations in front of the atomic statement in the body. So the general clause, so this is no longer definite clauses, so the head will hold if, possibly not B1, or just B1, and so on. So we have some statements in the body. And the general way in which people have tried to think about this is to use negation as failure for the negation here. Because we don't really have a good handle on the standard logical negation in the logic programming context. But this is actually somewhat problematic, but let's see how far we can get. So what's the goal here? So the goal is to say, well, suppose I have a program in which I'm going to allow myself in the body of the program to use all the things we already threw away. So I can allow myself to have explicit quantifications and implications and disjunctions and so on. So, and as I said, we'll see what I consider to be a nicer way of doing these things, so you have explicit disjunctions, implications, for all exists. So we already, so implication is only used in one place, not in the body. Kolo does have a if-then thing, but it's not logical implication. Okay, so the idea here is, let's think of some rules. Suppose I write something which uses all this. Can I turn it into one of these general programs? So something that just has that shape there. So the shape there has the comma for the and it has a version of negation. We're trying to see, could I turn an arbitrary setup in which, nevertheless, it's not full first order logic, so we have heads which are like this, and now in the body I'm allowing myself to take arbitrary statements like this. And the answer is yes, there's a nice thing we can do with this. So what about disjunctions? So the nots may go on. In the general case here, of course, we have negation, and negation can be arbitrarily deeply nested, and you form arbitrary logical statements using these things. So if you have a negated statement, A follows from V or W, then we say, yes, that's the standard thing you do in Prolog, that's the Prolog semicolon, and it goes into two separate clauses, that's fine. And what about the negation, A if not B or W, that's A if not V, A if not V and not W. That's one of De Morgan's laws. And conjunction is the same the other way around, if you like. So V and W, that's comma, just as a conjunction. And the negation gives you a disjunction property the other way around. Should that be an or? Should I copy that from somewhere? Let me check that. Okay, what about the implications? So you have to think that what's in the body here is on the left of the implication. So you read the top one and say, what does it mean to say A follows from V implies W? And again, you can do the truth tables and see. Again, in this case, we've got two cases for the W positive and the V negative. So unpack this, and then notice that this altogether should mean that that V implies W implies A, and then use the truth tables to show that what you've got on the right-hand side there should be equivalent. And we've got a double negation. Let's get rid of that. For the for alls, we turn them into exists by sticking extra negations in if we have to. So again, these are standard. If you write them out, these are standard logical equivalences that we're dealing with. The strange-looking one is, what do you do with existentials? So a normally existential quantified goal is the normal Prolog reading. So if I have a goal with a variable in it, a goal, which I've rubbed out, in the goals we're saying, is there a value for the variables? Well, what does it mean to say, is an existentially quantified statement false? So the idea here is to introduce a new predicate name. So this P will be a new name that's introduced at just at this point in the program, and its definition is that P holds if there's an existentially quantified version of the V, and then you expand that recursively. So we're sticking in this new predicate and we're negating it. So remember, what we're trying to reach is this notion of general programs in which negations are straight in front of the atomic predicates that we're defining. So I have to invent a new P here and fit that in. Okay, so no those are pretty much the sort of things you'd come up with if you were asked that problem. How could I get a set of rewrite rules, and these rewrite rules are going to apply to an arbitrary program, keep applying them repeatedly until you end up with something which is in the shape of a general program. And what we're saying at the bottom is that actually we want to do this for not only the case where we've got on the right-hand side exactly an implication, but we may have several things in the body of any clause, and we want to distribute what's going on. So we go inside and make use of the context in the obvious way. Okay, so it's not too hard to implement that. It's reasonably easy to justify that using classical logic that you would end up with something which would be equivalent. Now let's see how this is going to work. So if you sat down and went through this, there's a program you might define. When is X a subset of Y? So in here is just membership. We're saying X is a subset of Y if for every U, if U is in X, then U is in Y. So that's not something we can write down directly as a logic program, because it has this explicit universal quantification. If I didn't put the quantifier there, it would mean, is there something which is, if it was in X, would be in Y, which is something completely different. It's also got the implication on the right-hand side. So those are two things that we don't have in normal logic programming. And if we go through the transformations, then you get those clauses there. X is a subset of Y if P fails for X and Y. So P is now this freshly introduced predicate, because it's existential quantifications when we went round the ins and the outs of this. And then P, this newly introduced predicate, holds if U and Y fails and U and X succeeds. So we're trying to define subset by in terms of the negation of being a subset, which is what P says, and PXY is supposed to now define X is not a subset of Y. So if you think about that, that's what that will end up. So this works kind of. So is 3-5 a subset of 6-5-4-3-2? Yes. Is 3-5 a subset of the intersect? No. Is 3-5 a subset of 6-5-4? Yes. Well, okay, so the last one is wrong if you use the normal prologue interpreter and negationist framework. So there's something here which we need to look a little bit at. So the idea is fine, and what this is saying is there's some unsoundness in negationist failure, which is what's being used. You can write down that program easily. You can trace these queries and try and see where it goes wrong. So this Lloyd-Topor transformation works fine, provided you can deal with this problem here, and some systems will deal with this soundness question, but it's not it's not the standard way of dealing with things. So most prologue systems place no restriction when negationist failure is used. So this not will get used even when there are variables in the query. Okay, so here's a sort of example which I think we've seen so far. So I think this was one of the tutorials so far. So this is an example where you call P of A, you're going to end up with the wrong answer. So that not is being queried when when the X is still a variable. So should that succeed, P of A, you would think, well, that should hold if there is some X such that not QX. But actually you see the horrible ambiguity about what's going on there. But we only have Q of A, so under the closed world assumption, the only thing that's there is A. So this doesn't follow taking the completion. It's not true in the minimal Herbin model. It's almost certainly not what the program intended. We can implement a sound form of negationist failure. How are we going to do this? So if we have a sound form of negationist failure, then we can make use of this Lloyd-Topor transformation. And let's think what we need to do here. So we've said that using closed world assumption is fine. So in that case, we're only using negationist failure when a particular state, particular goal is called with its arguments ground. So what can happen here is that there's a problem. What's the problem here? So negated goals should only be tested if they're ground without variables. That's the only time we can be sure that we're getting back the right answer. But the problem, sort of problem here is that a goal with variables, when you first try and call it using a normal Prolog interpreter, may have variables in it. But it may be the case that later on, when you solve some of the other goals, that actually the variables become ground. So if we have a shared variable between two goals and we're trying to solve the first one, that may involve a negation, and we may be in the unsound situation. But if you put these goals in different order and called another one first, then it would have become ground when you called it, and then we'd be in the OK situation. So you can see this is potentially quite a hard problem here. So one mechanism that can be used to write interpreters that will do this is a mechanism of freezing goals. So you can make some condition on when am I actually going to try and satisfy a goal. And this is a general purpose mechanism which is good for writing quite quickly meta-interpreters, which I think you've seen or will see in the other part of this course. So this is not a total answer I'm trying to give you here, but I'm trying to say this is the sort of thing you can do. You can do this in Sixes, for example. So here you have the ability to suspend goals until some property holds. So you can write programs, you can put inside of your program an annotation that says, well, don't try and solve this goal unless some particular situation is satisfied. So you can freeze the goal, and that goal will be held when future goals are solved. And if the solving of a later goal enables that condition to succeed, then you can go back and tackle this particular goal. So this is what we do. You take this when predicate and you stick a condition on it, and the condition is made up of some combinations of these things. You can query is a variable non-var, is it ground, are two variables syntactically identical, and you can do conjunctions and disjunctions of these sorts of things. So when that's being executed, if the condition doesn't hold at that moment, then that will simply block and it will be reactivated later on. So you may reach a situation where everything is blocked, in which case you say, well, I don't know. That's a don't know situation. So let me show you a little example, if I can. Just to know how to do this. Okay, so what we have is at the top there is a very short program. So we've got P1. And if you take a declarative reading of that, it's saying, I want an x such that check if x fails and x is related to some y. And the second one is exactly the same, except we've stuck around that negated goal, when, which means that's going to be frozen until the x becomes ground. So in the first case, what do we think the solution should be for P1? Is there an x such that check if x fails and x is related to y? Yes? No? Any votes for yes? 1 for the x, and then the check will fail for 1. So 1 is an answer to that. Check will fail for 1, and 6, and we've got a y such that well holds. So in this case, we actually get the answer no back if we call that one. We call P2, and the only distinction here is we have the call to the negated goal is delayed, then we should see that we get back the value 1. Is there anything else? No. So what this is saying is, this is a way to go about it. This is not the total solution, but what it is saying is that you can enforce by these sorts of means that negated goals are only called in the situation where the arguments are grounded, and then you know that you're in a safe situation. You know you're in the situation where you're getting the answer from the least Herbert model, and you know you're in a situation where the theory overall will be consistent. Okay, so let's stop there. So what we were looking at there was a bit more on negationist failure. We looked at the Clark completion, so we have computing a completionist, which John Lloyd claims is generally the intended interpretation of what's going on in these programs. And we looked at this possibility of doing some coroutining by looking at the state of goals when they're called in the middle of interpreting a program. Okay, let's stop there. So tutorials as usual this week, and we're getting towards the end of this